This is Phil Farron. I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's either episode 710 or 711. It may be 711. 711. And yeah, all that stuff that I said like last week about how things seemed to be taking a turn and people were kind of getting back to some like rationality and stuff. Yeah, never mind. So, this is so fascinating to watch this. It is now after the election of 2022. And yeah, the pollsters were wrong again. So, wow, this is fascinating. So anyways, as far as my personal stuff goes, work was good. We had a good week at work. I'm just doing some training. It's all going well. Everything's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. Writing is going fine. This is the last week. I'll have a couple of days, like on Sunday and Monday, I have a couple of days that I'll finish up some writing. But writing is going well, so I'm on chapter 11, I think, of the new book. There's normally about 32 chapters, somewhere in there, 31, 32 chapters, so I'm kind of right where I need to be. I'm a few words down for the week, but I'm going to make those up and it'll be fine. There were extenuating circumstances. Had a birthday party this last week, so that chewed up some time. I am now 64, so there you go. And all is well. Anyways, work was good. Writing is good. Costume, I'm pretty well coasting out for the rest of the year. I have all my costumes for the rest of the year, and I have all my costumes for the beginning of next year. And so I'm good there. I am working on a couple of costumes. One for the first Saturday in February, and then the first weekend in March. I normally do Wear Red Day, the first Friday in February, and then Wear Blue Day, the first Saturday, first Friday in March. And they're good causes, you know, one's like colon cancer for women or something like that, and the other, you know, so they're good causes. But they're just okay. They're cute. People enjoy them. And so I was just kind of looking around of like, well, what else is out there? And I think I'm actually going to do a split weekend. I'm going to do a couple of split weekends next year, because I'm going to do Wear Red Day on the Friday, that first Friday in February. But then I'm going to do National Hemp Day. Hemp, as in the hemp plant. I'm going to do National, I think, going to do National Hemp Day, because it's the 4th of February, and I thought, I came up with an idea that I thought would be fun for a costume, and so I'm going to need that. I was planning on just doing National Hemp Day total for that weekend, but as it turns out, February the 3rd is the first Friday in February. It is National Wear Red Day. It also happens to be Elmo's birthday. And the costume is an Elmo derivative. So, yeah, no. Since it's going to be Elmo's birthday, sure, why not? So we're going to do that. And then the first Friday in March is going to be on that week, or the next week, is National Cheerleader Week. So I thought, well, that could be fun. So I'm working on that as well. So the costumes are going along fine. I don't know what's beyond that. I do get to celebrate in January. I think I mentioned this. National Blame It on Someone Else Day, which is always fun. It's the first Friday, the 13th of the year. So that'll be fun. That will actually, this year, be January 13th. The first Friday, the 13th in 2023 is as early in the year as it can possibly be, because it's the first Friday the 13th of the year, which is in January. Anyway, so that's all good. Everything's potted along. All is well. This was a really interesting week because there had been so many projections by so many people about how that they were thinking that there was really going to be a manifestation of people's frustrations over this administration, the inflation, the energy shortages, the open border, bad foreign policy. It's just a whole host of things that if you were looking to point fingers, even on the Democratic side, there was less enthusiasm. You know, typically when the party that's in power during the midterms takes a beating, and typically when the president's approval rating is down as far as it is, they take a bigger beating. This is normally what happens. And yet it didn't. I mean, it is still true that it appears that the Republicans are going to take the House at this point. Certainly, when you look at somebody like a New York, there was a bunch of stuff that went red in New York. But it appears that the Republicans at this point are only going to squeak by in the House and take control of the House, which is important because that will slow down the ridiculous spending bills and all that sort of thing that have been going through. So that part is good. The Senate is still up for grabs, which is just, it's just amazing. It's just amazing that things are consistently this close. And you just kind of would have expected that historically we would see different outcomes, but we haven't. There's been all sorts of prognostications about why this happened. A lot of people talking about all the different potential factors of why. But one of the factors, without question, has to be that people are so dug in now. It's not even about issues anymore. I mean, it really is just blood feuds now. It's like the Hatfields and the McCoys. And maybe we can't remember what we're fighting about, but we're definitely fighting. And we can't look each other in the eye anymore, and Democrats can't talk to Republicans, and Republicans can't talk to Democrats, because everybody believes that the other side is just horrible, blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't matter what kind of campaign you're running. It doesn't matter what kind of candidate you're running. You know, I've heard other people say this, and they're absolutely true. They said, you know, you can say, well, the Republicans just didn't run strong candidates, and so that's why they didn't do as well. But the Democrats have Joe Biden, who gets scared of black things on the ground, can't remember names of people half the time, is wandering around, and he got elected. And then this time, we actually had a guy with a full-blown stroke who had great difficulty in articulating things, and he still won. So it's not about quality of the candidates. Maybe that's a little bit when it comes to the independent voters, maybe. But the fact that you had independent voters who were willing to split, maybe methinks that the independent voters aren't as independent as we think they are. And maybe, in fact, we have much more division even among our independent voters than you would think from the term independent. that people are voting down the party line. I mean, I call myself an independent voter, but I will just freely say, based on the performance of the last 2 years, there was just no way that I was going to vote for a Democrat. It's just not, I mean, so much damage in the last 2 years. So, you know, we can call ourselves independent, but if we're walking into a voting booth and we're like, yep, I'm going to circle all the circles that go my way, whether or not I know these people or not, well, then, you know, it's all just down straight party lines. And it's amazing how evenly dispersed it is. It's just amazing. Now, people had their hot button issues. I was reading somewhere that one analysis was saying that 70% of single women voted Democrat. In that case, you would think it probably had something to do with abortion. People probably underestimated how big the abortion issue was going to be. And my response to that is, you know, if we think abortion is so important that it's actually more important than inflation and in energy prices, in very tragic foreign affairs, in millions of people flooding across the border and bringing in fentanyl, if we think abortion is more important than any of that stuff, well, okay. You know, we have the country we deserve to have. So it was a really, really interesting week. Thankfully, it does look like we're at least going to lock up the government to slow things down a little bit. And that'll be good. Now, I tell you one thing that I think apparently had an effect is that from what I had read and seen, the Democrats had fairly well announced that the way they were going to win this election is they wanted to scare the living daylights out of the independent voters. And so they were more than willing to win the election just by telling people that, well, this is going to be the end of democracy. If you don't vote for us, it's the end of democracy, which, you know, they've been saying that kind of thing for years and years and years. But I don't know that I have ever heard about the type of articles that was mentioned in one of the people I was listening to. So there was this article that was written, and it was published in The Guardian, and you talk about something that is just fear-mongering and ridiculous. This was published on Sunday, November 6th. So this was published 2 days before the election in The Guardian. And the title of the article is, These are conditions ripe for political violence. How close is the U.S. to civil war? You know, and so they go through and say, Americans are increasingly talk about civil war. In August, after the FBI raided Donald Trump's home in Florida, Twitter references to civil war jumped 3,000%. Trump supporters immediately went online, tweeting threats that a civil war would start if Trump was indicted. You know, there would be riots in the street if Trump was indicted, and blah, 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 violence and the thing, violence and thing. 2 years ago, no one was talking about a second civil war. Today, it is common. Okay, that is not true. I've been hearing about comments about civil war for a really long time. There were comments about Timothy Veigh when they were blowing up the Oklahoma office building, Oklahoma City. I mean, they were talking about, oh, this may be the beginning of, you know, blah, 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 blah. So the author of this article wrote this book called How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them. Oh, okay, this will be interesting. Let's see. What suggestions do you have for stopping civil war starting? So, you know, then the author of this article goes on to say, if a second civil war breaks out in the U.S., it will be a guerrilla warfare fought by multiple small militias spread throughout the country. Their targets will be civilians, mainly minority groups, opposition leaders and federal employees. Judges will be assassinated. Democrats and moderate Republicans will be jailed on bogus charges. Black churches and synagogues bombed. Pedestrians picked off by snipers in the city streets. And federal agents threatened with death should they enforce federal law. The goal will be to reduce the strength of the federal government and those who support it, while also intimidating minority groups and political opponents into submissions. We know this because far-right groups such as the Proud Boys have told us how they plan to execute a civil war. They call this type of war a leaderless resistance, and they are influenced by the plan in the Turner Diaries from 1978, a fictitious account by a future civil war. Written by William Pierce, a founder of the Neo-Nazi National Alliance, it offers a playbook for how groups of fringe activists can use mass terror attacks to awaken other white people to their cause, eventually destroying the federal government. The book advocates attacking the Capitol building, setting up a gallows to hang politicians, lawyers, and newscasters, and teachers who are so-called race traitors, and bombing of the FBI headquarters. Okay, yeah. So then they go on, well, we found pages of the Turner Diaries here and here and here, and we found this, and, you know, this said this and this, and it goes on and on and on. What's really amazing to me is that apparently 200 yahoos going into the Capitol building, potentially invited in by the Capitol Police, they never have released the video from the inside of the Capitol building. Apparently, that's terrible. That's just terrible. They just go on to describe how these extremists are going to do this and they're going to do that. Then they go and they talk about how insurgency experts wondered whether the January 6th would be the beginning of such a sustained series of attacks. This has not happened yet. Right. It has not happened yet. But it's in part because of the aggressive countermeasures by the FBI, because they've arrested more than 700 people who participating in the riot, charging 225 of them with assaulting, resisting, and impeding officers and employees. Okay, yeah, they did that, but they certainly didn't arrest Ray Epps. You should look up Ray Epps. You know, and what's amazing to me is they're like, oh, January 6th, it's so terrible, there were 200 riots. Okay. This was after a year. Billions of dollars worth of damages to our inner cities. Rioting. Burning. You want to talk about something that looks like an insurgency starting? But not once in this article does it ever mention that, because that was all righteous. And our politicians were bailing people out of jail. It's like, oh yeah, okay. I mean, yeah. We also know who tends to start civil wars, especially those fought between ethnic, religious, and radical groups. This does not bode well for the U.S. The groups that tend to resort to violence are not the poorest groups or the most downtrodden. Okay, who were all those people who were rioting? In what, 2020? The entire summer of 2020? Who were all those people? But this is what she said. Oh no, it's the groups that had once been politically dominant but are losing power. Okay, yeah. Okay, so, and it just goes on and on and on and on like this, pointing the finger. It's us versus them. And them are white people. And them are the people who are used to being in power. You know, so, okay. So, the big solution here, the big solution is, how do we stop it? Well, you know, what we need to do is we need to regulate social media. And the result would be a drop in everyone's collective angers distrust and feelings of threat. Oh, really? Would it? Hasn't that been what's been happening through 2020 and COVID? Haven't we had a federal government telling social media platforms to deplatform people? That certainly seems to have dropped the temperature, doesn't it? What can we do about this? The obvious answers are for our political leaders to invest heavily in strengthening our democracies. Okay, how are we going to do that? Well, to have their political parties reach across racial, religious, ethnic lines. But here in America, the Democratic Party does not have the votes to institute the much-needed reforms of our political system, and the Republicans have no interest. They are moving in the opposite direction. But there is a potentially easy fix. Regulate social media, and in particular, the algorithms that disproportionately push the incendiary, extreme, threatening, and fear-inducing information into people's feeds. Okay, so in other words, this article is not incendiary, extreme, threatening, or fear-inducing at all. Because I have the solution. I see. Uh-huh. Take away the social media bullhorn and you turn down the volume on bullies, conspiracy theorists, bots, trolls, disinformation machines, hate mongers, and enemies of democracy. Okay. So when you put together a sentence that has the following words in it, take away the social media bullhorn and you turn down the volume on bullies, conspiracy theorists, bots, trolls, disinformation machines, hate mongers, and enemies of democracy. Okay, that's six different terms. When you're putting that in your article, do you not realize you are a bully, a conspiracy theorist, a disinformation machine, a hate monger, and an enemy of democracy? Because what you're saying is they're not allowed to speak. Better yet, I'm sure, they're not allowed to vote. They're not allowed to do this because we disagree with you. I mean, do you really think if you try to kick all those people off social media, which has been done for the last 2 years, do you really think that's going to stop people talking? I mean, that's not the answer. No civil war has ever had a single cause. It's always a multitude of factors that lead to decline and collapse. The current U.S. has several of what the CIA calls threat multipliers. Environmental crises continue to batter the country. Economic inequality is at its highest level since the founding of the country. And demographic change means that the U.S. will be a minority white country in just over 2 decades. All these factors tend to contribute to civil unrest wherever they are found in the world. Okay, well, yes, except why would having a white minority contribute to that? Because supposedly having a white minority means that whoever the whites were backing would lose power. Except people aren't monolithic. One of the big takeaways from this election was that, in fact, Miami-Dade County, high level of Hispanics, went for DeSantis. So all of a sudden, if you have non-white people who are voting on both sides of the aisle, you don't have the supposed power, the party in power, losing power. Unless it's the Democrats. So yeah, this whole stirring up. So for 40 years... But the U.S. is more vulnerable to political violence than other countries because of its decrepitude in its institutions. For 40 years, trust in institutions of all kinds, the church, the police, journalism, and academia, has been in a free fall. Okay, why do you think that is? trust in politicians can hardly fall any lower. Right. Why do you think that is? And there is no reason for trust. The Constitution, while unquestionably a work of genius, was a work of 18th century genius. It simply does not reflect, nor can it respond to the realities of the 21st century. Oh, yes, it can. And the reason that it can is because it's based on basic human principles that you really don't want to empower any group of people without some kind of checks and balances. That is the genius of the Constitution, is that it recognizes basic human nature and how deranged people can get. And you want a system that's going to generate within itself these checks and balances. The American electoral system is already hugely localized, outdated, and held together by good faith. Any failure to recognize electoral outcomes, even in a few states, could result in a contested election in which nobody reaches the threshold of 270 electoral votes. In that case, the Constitution stipulates a contingent election. Acclimatize yourself to this phrase now, in which each state gets a single vote. That's right. No candidate in an American presidential election reaches a threshold of 270 electoral votes. The House delegations from individual states, overwhelmingly dominated by Republicans, pick the president, with each state having one vote. Now, I ask you, if for this person, if the Democrats dominated state delegations, would they have any problem with this rule? Because this is all us versus them. The whole article is us versus them. That, well, this isn't working for us, so we just got to overthrow everything and go on. And, you know, there's going to be a civil war if we don't do something. We need to clamp down on these. I mean, you just see this over and over and over. America is rushing headlong into another civil war, and it is not a matter of when. It is a matter of when, not if. As political science professor Barbara F. Walter argues, civil wars are likely in the presence of two factors, anarchy and ethnic anocracy and ethnic fractionalism. When one considers the centrality of race to American politics, it is clear that ethno-nationalism is hastening the movement toward anocracy. Okay. So what's the solution? I mean, it goes on and on and on. You know, it goes on and on and on. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so election-related violence generally takes place when the following four factors are present. Highly competitive election, shift power, partisan division based on identity, winner-takes-all two-party systems in which political identities are polarized, and an unwillingness to punish violence on the part of the dominant group. All four are present in America now and will be more amplified in 2024. Okay, I ask you, was it a violent election? Was there rioting in the streets? People went and voted. All the projections said that there was going to be a significant red tide, maybe a red wave, maybe a red tsunami. Everybody went and voted. It wasn't. It'll turn out to be some kind of a red trickle. Is anyone rioting in the streets? No, they aren't. Okay, we are dug in and entrenched. There is no question about that. It's amazing how tight all these races are. I mean, the Arizona race is just amazing for several reasons. One is how tight that race is. Last time I checked, in the governor's race, there was only like 7,000 votes separating, you know, out of, what, 2 million or something like that. It's crazy. It's also crazy that they don't have they haven't actually counted the votes yet. Because they're hand counting all the stuff that was mailed in, because I think Arizona is one of the people who actually mailed ballots to everybody. It's like, oh, come on. So all four are present in America now and will be more amplified in 2024. We're almost there. White angst over increasing racial diversity makes another Trump candidacy and presidency likely, pushing us into anocracy. Democrats are having none of it. They're going to resist the slippery slope to autocracy the same way that their 19th century counterparts, the Party of Lincoln, refused to let the Confederacy bust up the Union. Likewise, should Democrats prevail in 2024, Republicans will revolt. The January 6th Capitol attack is a forewarning. Either way, I'll wager that civil war featuring terrorism, guerrilla warfare, and ethnic cleansing will be waged from sea to shining sea. In the end, race and racism will lead to another very American conflagration. Oh, hogwash. Hogwash. None of what she proposes as solutions is going to work. Now, if we keep publishing articles like that, if we keep having one political party basically saying the other political party is Hitler and that it's a threat to the democracy every time we turn around, well, you know, you keep doing that, there's a possibility that something's eventually going to happen. But the reason it's going to happen is because people are stoking us versus them. That's why it's going to happen. Because the solutions that they're coming up with are stoking us versus them. You know, I was thinking this week, one of the ways that you could go about this, and I'm not just saying that just the Democrats are doing this or just the Republicans are doing this, because I know people on both sides that are just, they have completely lost their minds. They've just completely lost their minds. I mean, they just can't get past the us versus them stuff. And it's really, really sad because it's tearing families. It's just, you know, people are like, well, I can't talk to them. You know, it's just so sad. And to those people who are like that, you know, I decided that my approach would be, once if someone started talking to me, I'd just say, wait, hold it. So are you saying that you're smarter than Jesus Christ? Are you saying that you're wiser? Are you saying that you're more spiritual? Are you saying that your approach is better than his? Are you saying that, well, what Jesus said was just so outdated now that we have to do it our own way? Are you saying any of that stuff? Because if you don't think you are and you're not doing what he said, then really you are. You're saying, I'm smarter than him, we're wiser than him, we don't need to pay attention to what he said because what he said doesn't matter at all today. It's just not relevant for today. It's just not relevant, period. But it is relevant. It is relevant. And Jesus had a very, very simple approach. Dead simple. Two most important things in life. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. Nothing in this article is love your neighbor as yourself. Nothing. It's all us versus them. And it's all about destruction, and it's all about fear-mongering and disinformation. All the things that this article accuses one side of doing, it is doing. And that's the problem with us versus them. One of the Jung or somebody, one of the psychologists that said accusations are often a revelation. Something like that. That whatever you're accusing someone of, that's really what you are either doing or would like to do. And if there's one thing that we saw clearly in this election, is we saw the Democratic Party, as a matter of course, as a matter of strategy, with their allies in the national media, pretending that this was going to be the end of democracy if it didn't go their way. Well, you know what? It doesn't look like it's going their way, because for whatever trickle that it is, it appears that at least the House at this point is going to go Republican, which means you know, we've thrown a monkey in the wrench so that we can slow down the spending and try to get us back. But nothing in that rhetoric on the Democratic side had any conciliatory tone at all. It was all, it's a threat to democracy, and if you let these people in power, they're going to destroy the country. It's all us versus them, and that's a bad road. And if you don't make any corrections against that bad road, who knows, there may end up being a civil war, which would be really sad. So the question is, how do we keep civil war from coming? It's very easy. Love your neighbor. Quit pointing fingers, quit accusing, quit condemning, love your neighbor. Listen to your neighbor. Let them have a different opinion than yours. That's how we stop this. But we definitely are not going to stop it the way we saw one side trying to win an election and just for the sake of winning an election, painting everyone on the other side as evil. That's not a good idea. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.